Hi, everybody. I'm Nobody, and welcome to the November 19th, 1997 edition of the Nobody Show, your unabashed voice of the left and left out, beaming the gospel of steely-eyed compassion from my station to my nation and out beyond the edge of darkness to the dawn of hope. I'm wearing funny headphones tonight, folks. The regular ones are broken, and these barely stay on my head. I feel like I'm a model trying to balance a book or something, you know? So if you call in tonight, don't say anything that makes me shake my head. I may lose the phones. But if you are going to call in tonight, those numbers to call in here are 800-213-WEOS, 800-213-WEOS, or 781-3897, 781-3897. I got a couple of announcements to start off. First of all, you should know that on December 1st, right here on WEOS at 9 o'clock in the morning, will be the premiere of Democracy Now!, hosted by Amy Goodman, a Pacifica Network show. I've never actually heard the show, but Amy Goodman has a very good reputation. She's one of the two journalists who survived and was a witness to the Dili massacre in East Timor. And it's a left-of-center public affairs show, and that's really all I can tell you. I haven't heard it. It has a kind of a varied format, and it's got a good reputation, and it will be on again starting on December 1st at 9 a.m. Also, I have a little correction to make about an item that I aired last week. I talked about November 17th as the most famous date you never heard of, and as I pointed out to people, this is the date which, in Jewish tradition, was the date on which the flood started. It's the date on which the festival of Isis was celebrated in Egypt, and which either the Aztecs or the Incas, at the moment I don't remember, every 52 years they prayed for the continuance of creation, which they thought was at risk at that time. And this, of course, was not dated on our calendar in November 17th. It was dated, as I explained, by when the star cluster we call the Pleiades reached its highest point in the sky, or what is in the old archaic term, its culmination in the sky. And I said that occurs on November 17th. Actually, I didn't quite finish the thought. It is on the day when the Pleiades reach their culmination at midnight. Every evening, stars make an arc through the sky. The highest point in that arc, or that perceived arc, is used to be called their culmination. As I explained last week, that has no relevance to any real astronomical calculations, which is one of the reasons why this ancient calculation is really virtually unknown today. And on November 17th, this is the day at which, in diverse cultures even, the fate of creation hangs in the balance. And it is when the Pleiades reach their culmination at midnight. Interestingly enough, the Ithaca Journal on Friday had a piece about November 17th astronomically, but for a different reason. It said, this was on Friday, November 14th, the Leonid meteor shower occurs every year about November 17th or 18th. When the Earth passes through the dusty orbital trail of comet Temple-Tuttle. Temple-Tuttle visits the inner solar system and crosses Earth's orbital plane every 33 years. This time around, it is due in January 1998, and will round the sun February 28th. The Leonid meteor counts often surge just before and after the comet's return. Some of you may remember I read a little brief bit from the Talmud about how before God initiated the flood, he took two stars out of the Pleiades, and that may have been a meteor shower occurring at that same evening, part of that. Well, who knows? But anyway, I wanted to set the record straight. It's not just when the Pleiades reach their culmination. It's when they reach their culmination at midnight, which occurs and always will occur approximately on November 17th. I want to convey to you one image. I am waiting for a phone call, which we will get to if it comes. But I want to convey to you what to me was the single most powerful image in a certain way that I saw since my last show. It haunts me, but it's a kind of an image of something in its absence as opposed to the presence of something, not the image of some starving kid with a distended belly or corpses in a war zone or refugees, all of which are powerful images. But in its own quiet way, just as powerful. To me, it was an interview I saw with Lawrence Eagleburger, who had been actually briefly our acting Secretary of State, Secretary of State, I think, under Bush, but mostly was an Undersecretary of State, a man I've disliked for many years, and various contexts. He's always impressed me as an unprincipled man and an apologist for all kinds of terrible things. But I don't really remember chapter or verse about it. That's just been my long-term impression of Lawrence Eagleburger. And he was being interviewed somewhere about Saddam Hussein. Maybe it was on CNN or someplace. And somebody, quite to my amazement, asked him a question about the effects of the blockade of Iraq. And I think they used a figure of 500,000 dead Iraqi children. I think the figure is higher than that. They said, well, what about this, you know, something. I don't remember the words. It's the first time I ever heard a public official asked about it. Not saying it never happened. I just don't recall seeing it. And somebody said, well, what about the suffering in Iraq, the supposed, the 500,000 children who may have died as a result of the blockade, and how does that factor into this? Now, Eagleburger looked at the camera, and what he said was quite simple. He just said, in a flat voice, something along the lines of, it's up to Saddam Hussein what will happen next, or it's up to Saddam Hussein what will happen. All right, there are complexities in this situation, but I'd like to contrast that answer with the answer that Reserve Lieutenant Colonel Gavri Borgil, who was the head once of Shalom Akshav, or Peace Now in Israel, who I interviewed on this show. And I said to him, you know, you're air for peace, but, you know, there's other things about peace. You know, there's a whole quest for a better world. Look at Gandhi. I mean, you know, you're a person who's perfectly ready to go out there and lead people in a war. And doesn't the whole military posture bother you in some ways? And he said about this in general, for how people, I think, in Peace Now felt. As I recall the conversation, he said, we don't like it, but that's the way it is. And to me, that comment, we don't like it, is what made him a human being, as far as I'm concerned. We don't like it. He was talking about a circumstance where you feel you must operate in a certain way, despite very bitter aspects to that reality, which he was acknowledging. And very often, people who have been soldiers are the most ardent opponents of war, certainly the most ardent opponents of needless war, because they know what it really represents in blood. And I thought he acknowledged that, but there was something to me so chilling about the coldness of Lawrence Eagleburger that he could not pause, did not pause, would not pause for even 1 second to say, it's deeply troubling when so many children die. This is a troubling situation. This is a difficult, this is a painful reality. But if he would have said, I might or might not have agreed with him, but if he had said, this is a painful reality, but in the end we feel more children will be saved by putting restraints on a country like Iraq than are dying now, no matter how badly we may feel about it. I'm not saying that would have even been an acceptable answer, but to acknowledge it anyway, to say, yes, people are dying, children are dying by the hundreds of thousands as a result of this stalemate that we have not found a way out of, that we don't even seem, quite frankly, to be pursuing a way out of, that we seem to be stalling to find a way out of, that he could so coldly refuse to acknowledge 500,000 dead children. It was shocking to me. I watched the Buffalo football game, the game of the week against Miami. I caught a snippet of it. And there was a catch there somebody made, and they went out of bounds. And then, were they out of bounds? Weren't they out of bounds? Marv Levy was arguing the call that there was a good reception, and the guy who had made the reception was lying on the ground writhing in pain. I don't know if Marv Levy even saw it. And I just caught a second of it, and the guy standing next to me said, that's ridiculous. You know, it looks ridiculous. They're arguing over a call, and there's this guy on the ground writhing around in pain. One football player about to get medical attention, writhing around in pain. And for the coach, it just sort of offends human sensibilities to be there arguing the call and not even realizing somebody's hurt. But to be ignoring 500,000 children, maybe 600,000 children dead, don't even get lip service from the president or from Lawrence Eagleburger directly. But what we get instead, is Bill Clinton talking about we have to do this thing to Iraq, we have to ratchet up the military tension to make the world safe for children. I hadn't heard anything that bad since I saw a documentary on Hitler, and I saw that the Nazi newscast referred to Hitler as a man whose love of children was well known. That man who was responsible for the deaths of millions of children. The cruel, extraordinarily brutal deaths of millions of children. Here is Bill Clinton enforcing a policy that will have cost hundreds of thousands of lives of children, ratcheting up the engines of war once again. and justifying it on the grounds that it's going to be good for children. Always beware of politicians who say that what they're doing is good for children. As I've said on this show before, the only time politicians ever care about children is when they want to start a war. But, of course, the administration's hypocrisy hardly stops there. Here's an article from the Post-Standard, Syracuse Post-Standard, of November 17th. A long article entitled, "Experts Say U.S. Has Few Options." All right. Never mind these ostensive experts. Let's just cut to the chase here. This is the end of the article, the last bit of it. It says, "The crux of the administration's anti-Saddam argument is the Iraqi leader's refusal to surrender chemical and biological weapons and his history of using them against Iran and his own people. UN inspectors also discovered Iraqi warheads containing anthrax." To illustrate the argument, Defense Secretary William Cohn appeared on ABC with slides, charts, a test tube, and a 5-pound sack of Domino sugar. Cohen asked his audience to imagine the sugar sack was filled with anthrax, a deadly bacterium. "One breath and a person would die within 5 days," said Cohn, who reported a sugar sack's worth of anthrax could kill half the 550,000 people in Washington, D.C. Cohen's test tube represented VX nerve gas. "A single drop can kill a person within hours," he said. Weapons inspectors found 3.9 tons of VX gas and 2,100 gallons of anthrax after Saddam said he had destroyed all such weapons. I am not saying that there are not serious issues being raised about Saddam Hussein, but I am going to say that if Secretary of Defense Cohn was going to be standing there with a sack of sugar and talking about how why even just a little tiny bit of this stuff is dangerous, maybe a few weeks ago he should have had a 72-pound sack of sugar corresponding to the 72 pounds of potentially lethal plutonium that went up in the Cassini probe and may come back to destroying life on this planet, much of it, in 3 years or so. But, of course, we only hear about these kinds of dangers when we are told that it's in our interest to promote military action. So I would say, if you care about children, if children, saving the lives of children is your concern, you cannot be blind to a policy that kills 500 or 600,000 children without even stopping to say, yes, this is unpleasant. It doesn't even bother you enough to skip a beat. If you're concerned about the proliferation of dangerous substances, you oughtn't to be shooting them up into space where they might destroy many lives on this planet in the atmosphere and their distribution, et cetera, in the event of a mishap. And this is the kind of reason why people have no faith in this government. This is only one of a billion reasons, really, why the structure of trust, which is essential to any government, why they talk about, is it the Declaration of Independence, that governments derive their powers from the just consent of the governed, why that is eroding in the United States. Those numbers to call in here again are 800-213-WEOS or 781-3897. 800-213-WEOS or 781-3897. Well, I've gotten that phone call I'm expecting. On the phone right now is an emissary from the Nation of Flamingo. Are you there, caller?
Hi, Jeremy. Yes, this is Dave Bush.
Well, welcome to the Nobody Show, where I go by the name of Nobody. Dave, are you one of the former residents of the Nation of Flamingo?
Yes, I am one of the former residents of the Temporary Autonomous Zone of Flamingo.
And are you one of the ones who was arrested this morning?
Yeah, our nation was invaded.
Okay.
And we were hacked out of bear claw devices and hauled off to jail by the police.
Would you like to tell people who are listening here in upstate New York and probably have never heard of the Autonomous Zone of Flamingo or the Nation of Flamingo anything about what on earth this thing is? What is Flamingo?
Flamingo is an autonomous free zone of homeless people that was camped on Rand Corporation and McGuire Thomas Partners Corporation property in Santa Monica on Ocean Boulevard, right across the street from the Lowe's Hotel.
Santa Monica, California.
Yeah, it was made up of economic and social refugees of all classes and colors. We were right across the street from the Lowe's Hotel, and we were calling ourselves the real Lowe's. The Lowe's is a hotel that everyone from presidents to movie stars stay at constantly.
And the Flamingo was what? It used to be a hotel?
Yes, it used to be a hotel. It actually, right immediately before it was boarded up, it was low-income housing in the city of Santa Monica, unless there's a critical shortage of.
Okay. And so how many people went in and occupied it? Illegally, under current law, you occupied this structure, correct?
Under the laws of this country, under the laws of the international laws of human rights, signed by the Declaration of Human Rights, signed by the Indian Nations, we were perfectly legal. We were seeking our rights as human beings for human rights of food, clothing, and shelter, and jobs. And we were there. There was probably as many as 100 who spent the night over the period of 7 days that we were there. And this morning, when we were invaded, many of our occupants fled, scattered, and a group of three of us allowed that to happen by locking ourselves down in the bear claw device and delaying the police tactics that were there to storm us all out.
What is the bear claw device?
It's a device that was pioneered by direct action activists, groups like Earth First. And it's proven very effective in delaying the police abusive tactics when property owners and major corporations and oppressors come to use police powers of this country to put property rights over human rights. And you do this by making yourself visible to the other people, the other citizens. You do this by delaying yourself. It's a device where you chain and secure yourself wrist to wrist, in a shackle of metal pipe, preferably encased by cement. The idea is to delay the police from removing you. And this was first used in the Headwaters Forest just recently up in Northern California to stop the logging of redwood trees, the last 4% of the ancient redwoods that have stood in this country since the time of Columbus. And they're logging them up there at a place called a company called Pacific Lumber. These activists chained themselves with a bear claw there in that company's office, and they were tortured out of those devices with pepper spray. The police here cut us out.
How long did it take them to get you out?
An hour.
So you're kind of like the soldiers who stay in the foxhole when the enemy is coming in to let the other parts of the unit withdraw, in a way. You offered yourself up as sacrifices to your cause.
Exactly. I consider myself a prisoner of conscience.
Okay. And you were taken to jail this morning, and are you in jail now?
We were just released. We have to come back in for arraignment.
Is this your first media interview since your release?
Yes.
Well, I'm honored to have you here on the Nobody Show.
Well, I'm honored to speak with a nobody who sounds like a real somebody.
Well, thank you very much. So tell me, what went on in the nation of Flamingo, the autonomous zone of Flamingo? I mean, if you had been left to yourselves, mm-hmm. would the 100 of you or whatever have simply turned this place into chaos, into an unsafe circumstance, or would you have been able to govern yourselves and survive in that space, do you think?
Not at all. We were governing ourselves, and we were surviving. In fact, we were providing services at no cost to the city that equaled what the city was providing. The city of Santa Monica was providing a cost of $2 million a year. We were supporters, individuals, and voluntary effort were bringing food, clothing, lighting, safety devices, sanitary devices.
This was sort of like People's Park in a way.
Absolutely, absolutely. And we were feeding 100 meals a day, three times a day. That's almost three times what the city's food program feeds people.
Has anybody in Los Angeles or in Santa Monica said why they had to get you out of there?
The police explanation was that we were trespassing. We met with city officials yesterday. We presented them with a series of negotiation of rights, and which they didn't have the courage to take back and represent to the city officials, even though we, as homeless people, are citizens of Santa Monica. I've been a homeless citizen of Santa Monica for 3 years, and I vote. And yet the city officials weren't representing us. But we did meet with them, and we did attempt to present our grievances and our call for human rights. Number one was amnesty. Santa Monica has led the country in enacting the worst anti-homeless laws in the nation, and other cities across the country have followed Santa Monica's suit. Anti-panhandling laws, anti-sleeping in the park laws. It is illegal for any person to be in a city park after midnight until 5 a.m., and it's illegal for any person to be on the beautiful beaches of Santa Monica after 10 o'clock until 5 a.m., and then during the daytime, so there's no place to sleep, no public grounds to sleep for homeless people. During the daytime, it is illegal for people to sleep in the parks or on the beach with a blanket over their body. And this is whether it is freezing or raining. To my mind, it's analogous to the torture of prisoners of war. It's recognized by international treaty that depriving prisoners of war of sleep is torture. And the city of Santa Monica is criminalizing homelessness. We want homes, not jails.
If anybody out there has a question for Dave, the numbers to call in here on the Nobody Show are 800-213-WEOS, 800-213-WEOS, or 781-3897, 781-3897. Dave, what happened to the city of Santa Monica? Years ago, it used to be referred to as the People's Republic of Santa Monica. It was considered a radical left-wing city.
Mm-hmm.
What happened?
Good question. We have major development interests that have seized control of the city council by propping up their politicians. The city of Santa Monica is 75 to 80% renters. The people in the city care, but these development interests are manipulating the power structure here to take away the caring attitude of citizens and replace these caring citizens with moneyed, insulated, heartless millionaires and billionaires. And this is important property for all the citizens of California and the United States. This is oceanfront property. And we as citizens have said over and over again that every citizen, regardless of their economic status and their place, has a right to share in the resources of the beach here. And Santa Monica, they had this reputation about 5 years ago. In the last 5 years, they started enacting anti-panhandling laws. They have a law that says that a homeless person cannot even sit on a bench in the Third Street Promenade in Santa Monica. This is a tourist city that rakes in millions of dollars, and many people do come to Santa Monica thinking that they're going to see a caring, compassionate city. And what they're finding is that the city is making it known that the caring and compassionate people, the people that want to serve people, are out. And they're trying to boot us out, and we're saying, compassion is something worth fighting for.
Dave, I hope you'll understand when I ask this, that many people are going to think that, many people think that homeless people are all just lazy bums. You're obviously articulate. Why are you homeless?
Because it's a, what's the best way to answer that? Why am I homeless? Because economic circumstances. Santa Monica is a very expensive city to live in. I have held jobs off and on for the last 3 years. And I work, but I cannot afford housing in the city of Santa Monica. I found myself several times forced to live on the streets. And
have you had housing during this period at all?
I have actually lived in the city shelter for 6 months. And I rented an apartment, and I was in a sales job. And the week that I actually moved into my apartment, for a week I'd used my savings to purchase the apartment. I got laid off from my job, as many people do, find themselves one check away from losing their apartment. And since that time, I found myself homeless. And many people in this situation will, in a homeless situation, are ashamed of it. And I feel that that's a crime. I feel that that's not right, that we should be proud of our economic status wherever we are. And we shouldn't judge each other by whether we have a roof over our head or how much money we make, but by the level of our compassion and the level of our honesty and the level of our truthfulness. And I felt it would be a violation of my personal integrity not to admit and speak out that I was homeless. And just as I would if I was in the middle class or making a job, speak out for the interests of that person, I feel that it would have been against my conscience not to speak out, finding myself in this situation for the illegal, the human rights violations I see.
Let me make it clear that I think that it is in the interests of a society, for any number of reasons, ranging from the most cynical, which is we don't want to spread diseases which can affect us, people with houses, to the more compassionate side, where it just is disgusting to see people lying in the streets and we shouldn't allow it. But for any number of reasons, it's in our interest as a society to have homes for everyone, whether they're deserving or undeserving, it makes no difference.
Yes, but, that's in the United Nations Declaration.
Right, but right. But when you look at these people, so there's nothing you could tell me about your fellow citizens of Flamingo that would make me say they don't deserve to have assistance in getting homes, but when you look at them, are these all people who you would characterize as the kinds of, you know, mentally unbalanced sleaze, basically, which
no.
is...
No. These are people who, many of them, have left their homes because they were in abusive situations. They have fallen. They've dropped out of college because they can't afford college. They have lost jobs. There are women who have separated from their mates and have their possessions piled up in shopping carts. And they are willing to provide and help, not just themselves. They're not out here for themselves. They want to build a community, but the city of Santa Monica doesn't give them the ability to provide for themselves. They'd rather make us dependent.
Did anybody in Santa Monica offer you an alternative space or discuss ways, alternative ways people could be housed?
No space was offered. As a matter of fact, a representative from the Ocean Park Community Center, which is the housing outreach program of the city of Santa Monica, came to our site, and I asked him if he could guarantee that every person at the temporary autonomous zone in Flamingo could have shelter that night. And he said no. But he wanted to come in and take the names of everybody and put them on their very expensive computer system. So,
so no. What does that get you? What were the, how many men, women, and children were there? I mean, what was the breakdown?
Men and women, I would say there was maybe 30% women, maybe 70% men. Many of these are young men and women. Children... we had no children there, no families.
Okay. Those numbers to call in again, folks, are 800-213-WEOS or 781-3897. Is this a big story out in Los Angeles now? It's not getting any coverage basically here, but is it a big story in L.A.?
Well, yes, I would guess so. I was told by the housing, Los Angeles Homeless Shelter Authority, LASA, that this was... this was the biggest story in the homeless community, and that the first night we were there, UPN station, Fox 13 out here, had us on their 10 o'clock report. Friday, we had a story and picture in the Los Angeles Times Metro section, the second largest newspaper in the country. Also, the city of Santa Monica newspaper, a night reader paper, The Outlook, had us on the front page with a picture and story. We were interviewed over several days by a listener-sponsored radio station, KPFK.
That's a Pacifica station.
Pacifica station. And also spoke with students by radio at Loyola Marymount University here in their radio station. Also a pirate station in Torrance. And Len, what's the name of the pirate station? Radio Clandestina.
Okay, and what has been the public reaction? Obviously, officialdom, they wanted you out of there. The police wanted you out. The city council of Santa Monica wanted you out. Mm-hmm. Well, have you had support from just the man and woman on the street?
People, just a continuing stream. I was amazed, just a continuing stream of people bringing food, clothing, shelter. We have the support of the people. It's the city officials that are trying to cut off that support and silence this community movement.
As from where you have, you know, obviously you're not a social scientist doing a survey across America here, and that may be worse, by the way, but from where you sit, is America a compassionate country towards the homeless, frustrated by a government that has a different agenda, or to some extent are we a country that's just got the wrong priorities and the people have those too?
I think that we're a country of people who care, but I think that we're a country of... that has been fed through the media and through our power structure, the line that these problems are insolvable and that you should fear them because they're insolvable. And the constant work of the oppressor seems to be to make people fear that these problems are insolvable, to move them to inaction. And anytime they see people with inspiration, stepping up and saying, I am a human being. I can solve these problems myself. I can love my neighbor. I can provide for my neighbor. I'm not going to judge my neighbor by whether they are dirty or clean or whether they have a toothless smile or some toothpaste smile. And I'm going to look at the quality of their character and not their appearance. That they immediately put on the pressure, as they have done here through these city officials, to squelch that spirit. It's about squelching the human spirit.
What was the reason that you called yourself an autonomous free zone? What was the thinking behind that?
Well, we feel that the city of Santa Monica wasn't recognizing the human rights of homeless citizens, and so we wanted to declare a free zone where the human rights of all occupants would be respected.
So did that mean it was no longer part of America in that sense?
No. It was part of America, we flew the American flag. We were very respectful in that. And as a matter of fact, we took as part of our community rallying cry the Declaration of Independence, and where it says, in order to promote the common good.
Well, okay. Well, I understand that better now, although I had taken it in a slightly different sense. Although, yeah, I do want to make the point to the listeners and to anyone else that
I'm one person in the autonomous zone of Flamingo has community voices. And
right. I just want to make the point that there is a threat to our democracy, not just from lunatics like the Republic of Texas, right-wing militias. It's a threat when the citizens don't feel embraced by their own country.
As a matter of fact, I have one of our other occupants here.
Oh, you do? Well, good. Dave, I want to thank you so much for coming on the air. Before you go, do you know what's going to happen to your 100 or so citizens there?
We'll continue to be placed in a catch-22 situation in the city of Santa Monica, where there's no legal place for us to sleep. The city provides no shelter, and there's no legal place for us to sleep. We'll continue to be forced by these authorities to sleep in doorways, business storefronts, alleys, people's yards, city parks, and risk, and be criminalized.
All right. Well, I am sorry to hear that, Dave, but I do wish you the very best, and I commend your courage for being one of the ones there who was able to protect the others.
I'm doing this for totally selfish reasons, the heart and the love of the people that I'm a community of. I want to, before I let you go, another gentleman here does have something he wants to say.
Well, I very much want to hear from him. So, again, my thanks to you, and maybe we'll even come back to you. Are you going to be around?
Yes.
Okay, well, who is this gentleman?
Here he is right now.
Thank you.
Hello.
Hi, what's your name?
My name is Lawrence Hageman.
Okay, well, welcome to the Nobody Show. And are you one of the citizens of Flamingo as well?
Yes, I am.
And were you one of the ones arrested today?
No, I was not arrested. We were warned to leave the property, and then the cops smashed in our door and gave us our little paper saying what the law was and escorted us out. Some of us could not grab our shoes or socks, so I had to step through glass on the ground. They really were not treating us as if we were people.
And what do you want people to know?
I want them to know that there is a shelter here that houses 50 people, and there are 1,500 people that are homeless here in Santa Monica. And that if we try to sleep somewhere, it is illegal. And I don't want to break the law. I want them to open up a shelter for the rest of us.
Ronald Reagan, I think it was, who said that there was plenty of shelters and food kitchens and everything else, and the people who were out on the streets just didn't know where to go. Is it possible that there's a lot of beds out there and you just are too ignorant to know what address this is?
No. I've been here a year as a homeless person. We network very well. We tell other homeless people where the possible shelters are, where supplies are. There is a shelter down the road that they won't open. It's on the Pacific Coast Highway. It's only for disasters, as in earthquakes, and they won't let us sleep there.
I once spoke to a woman named Nancy Minty, who is a lawyer working, I think, with the issues of homelessness down in L.A. I don't know if she still is. I interviewed her years ago. And she said that during these police raids, they sometimes will target the possessions of homeless people, which may include things like their medical cards, their ID, things they really need. Was there any of that went on in the invasion of Flamingo?
Just blankets, which we need at night. It does get very cold around here lately at night.
And you're talking upstate New York, so I mean we have a different sense of what that may mean. But in any case, it gets cold enough that you need a blanket out there.
Yes, it does.
Okay.
I'm from Michigan. I know cold.
Yeah, well, it's a different. But I know, because I've lived in L.A., that when you acclimatize out there, you get cold to temperatures that up when you're here, you'd go out and you'd sleep in the snow, you know, if it would get that warm. So
that's true.
It's a different sense of things. Lawrence, can you tell me why you're homeless? Can you tell my listeners why you're homeless? I mean, again, people have a perception that you ought to just be able to get a house, you ought to be able to just get a job, and that's kind of...
Let me fill that in for you. I used to be in the Army,
uh-huh.
And I had a job. I was a specialist as a cavalry reconnaissance scout. When I got back from Saudi Arabia,
mm-hmm.
They were downsizing us, so they asked me if I'd like to get out. And since I had no future as in getting a higher rank or anything like that, I said, sure. And when I got out, I became homeless. I didn't have an address. So when I try to get a job, my employers ask for the address so they can send me a paycheck. Well, I don't have an address. Okay, can we call you in case you have to work overtime? Well, I don't have a phone. Okay, if you got to get to work in 5 minutes, do you have a car? No, I'm homeless. I don't have a car. So there are a lot of reasons why we are homeless and why we stay homeless.
But you were honorably discharged?
Yes, I was general under honorable conditions discharge.
Okay, so, and you were good enough to serve in the Gulf?
Yeah.
They were perfectly willing to have you get shot or kill somebody, right? So,
exactly.
I mean, you were good enough for that, right?
Yeah.
So, well, I am certainly wish to say sorry that you find yourself in the circumstance that you have no place to sleep. And the only thing I can say is that I'm glad that if you have to be in that circumstance, at least you can strike a blow for people's awareness that that there are people in need. And I think that the people of Flamingo have succeeded in doing that. And that at least is, I hope, something that that you take heart from, that you are reaching people through your actions there.
Well, thanks, New York. Why don't you call Santa Monica and give them your support? And that way they might open a shelter quicker and listen to your viewers.
All right. So people should call the Santa Monica City Council, you think?
Yeah. Give them a call and tell them that we need somewhere to sleep. All your listeners.
Where are you going to spend tonight, Lawrence?
I don't know. I'll find a park bench or a corner. Hopefully I won't get arrested tonight.
Where are you speaking from right now?
The jail telephone.
You mean you just got out of the jail and walked to the phone there? You're right in the lobby or something?
No, I'm waiting for my friend who just got out of jail.
Okay, but you're in the jail building still.
Yes, I am.
But you're not locked up.
No, I'm not locked up.
Now, I'm really so honored that you're calling from the jail. Tell me something, though. You know, Jesse Jackson made a speech to the Democratic Convention once, and he said that three hots in a cot, he said, that there are people so desperate that to get arrested... To get those three hots in a cot, it was worth it to them to get arrested, at least have a warm place to sleep. Do you feel that as getting arrested in some way better than staying on the streets?
I've been thinking that lately. Mm-hmm. If I get arrested, you're right. I get three hot meals and I get a place to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
True, I don't have my freedom, but have to sacrifice, right?
Well, I think it's a terrible, tragic position for a person to be in. I can only give you my very best wishes and say that I hope something will turn up and that you and Dave will be able to get out of this terrible situation. And I certainly am a believer that our society must do more. You know, we do things for salmon where we put in fish ladders so that
right.
Salmon can swim upstream, where we've built dams that essentially block the way.
Well, we'll send food to Somalia and other
right.
countries, but not here.
Well, my position is if we are willing to help a salmon, we ought to be willing to help a human being.
Yes.
And the salmon have this problem because of our economic activity. We built the dams that made their natural situation more difficult. And the same is true of your situation. It's the real estate barons who have bought everything up and manipulated the politics so that there's a shortage of housing. Don't we owe to the people who are left out by this and can't get upstream the same courtesy we would give to a salmon?
You have a great point there.
You know, so I guess, you know, that's my hope is people will be reached and we'll make some steps a little easier for you. And I'm sorry that I have to leave you going off and not knowing where you're going to stay, but I wish you the very best in that. Could I have just another word with Dave if he is if he is there? Thank you.
Right here. Hi.
Dave, well, I thank you very much for calling in tonight. I want to thank you for putting Lawrence on the phone. Is there any, now that your nation has been dispersed, do you have any plans to, is there some venue through which you can have activism there?
Well, we're a tribe, and the human spirit can't be put down. I would like to reiterate what the other speaker just said, that we can move the city council. We can overturn these laws. They are very sensitive to public opinion. People could have a profound impact by calling the city hall.
Do you happen to know the number of the city council in Santa Monica by any chance, off the top of your head?
Off the top of my head, no, I don't.
Well, maybe I can get it and announce it later on the show. But
there's another gentleman here who also wants to speak.
Well, good. I'd love
to
hear from him.
Was arrested.
All right. Well, Dave.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm going to sign off with you then, and then I will say goodbye after I've spoken to this this gentleman, because I'm running out of time as well. But would you also please, for me, convey my thanks to Lynn, who set this up, and tell her I will try to be in touch with her shortly, but that I very much appreciate her effort in getting you guys to the phone and making this possible as well. And my great thanks to you and good
will
wishes.
Will do, nobody.
Thank you.
Here's our other caller.
Thank you.
Hi.
Hi, welcome to the... Welcome to the Nobody Show. What's your name?
Michael Rainsborough.
Michael, and you were one of the ones in the Flamingo.
Yeah, I was there, and this morning at 5 o'clock, about 50 or 60 police came in and swarmed the building. And I got up and took a video camera and began video cameraing, and the two people... Jennifer and David, who were locked to the side of the building, I told the police, oh, I'm a legal observer. They said, you need to leave. So I went out of the fence, and it was on the other side of the fence, you know, about 20 feet from Jennifer and David. And at this point, I could hear them shouting in pain, and there's a dozen or more big, dark-suited police officers. A police officer came up to me in the alley and swatted the camera out of my hand, and the camera broke, and we haven't seen it. We're now trying to acquire property back that was left.
But you were arrested? Were you one of the ones arrested today?
I was arrested.
Okay, so that's why you're at the jail now, right?
Yeah, and I think I'm charged with the same charges.
Which is?
So I was.
What are you charged with?
That's unclear to me right now.
Okay.
They just put me out, and I think it's either a trespass charge or imminent danger to others.
Well, that's pretty heavy. Are you going to get legal counsel? Do you have free legal counsel from somebody out there?
Yeah, we've contacted Art Goldberg, who is from the Working People's Law Center. He's a traditional civil rights lawyer out here and has worked with Fruit Nut Bombs in other cases. I don't know if anyone mentioned anything about Fruit Nut Bombs, but it's an organization.
No, it's fun. Go ahead.
Right. And he recently got the city of Whittier to just drop a case of serving food to the homeless without a permit. It's a real tradition of cities wanting to keep poverty hidden.
They were serving food without a permit, and they were arrested for that, and then they had to get a lawyer to allow them to serve food. The same thing happened, I think, up in Sausalito, as I recall. But never mind. Michael, how long have you been homeless?
I am not homeless. Oh. I'm actually one of the only people who stayed there continually that was not homeless.
Oh, so you stayed in solidarity with the homeless.
Right? Yes, and I think that's a great thing that many people can do. I'm unemployed and behind on my rent and, you know, sort of not... very close to that, and I think that's, you know, important concept that an injury to one is an injury to all. That we need to look out for the people just below us, because those people are us next.
Well, this certainly is a question, what's going to happen if the economy goes haywire and we have additional millions of people out on the streets in the repressive climate that exists now. I don't think a lot of these comfortable middle-class white people are going to like very much
poverty made public, and that's a really important issue, is not to let poverty be hidden and tucked under the rug,
right?
Which is again and again what anti-poverty laws do. The cities of all across California have pioneered a group of laws anti-panhandling laws, camping ban laws, and what they're designed to do is the city would claim that they attack certain behaviors, but we know that these behaviors are characteristic of a class of people. So they're attacking a class of people from a specific economic background, really poor people. And when we talk about the economy and the economy going haywire, I think it's really important for everyone to remember that there's two economies. There's the economy of people who work for their living, and there's the economy of people who employ for their living, who, you know, have a large amount of money to invest and hire other people to do work for them and collect the profits from that. And their economy is going quite well. In fact, they're concerned to keep it at the same level, which is, an ongoing problem.
I know where you're going. At the bottom, however, the economy is going very badly because the jobs don't even pay enough to get you a car, to get you a place to stay. It's almost impossible.
Right. And at the top and on the news, the economy is supposedly great.
Right. Right.
The unemployment figures in our country only count those people who are processed in the government looking for a job. So when they say there's only this percentage unemployed, there's many other people who have just given up hope.
Right. All right. Well, Michael, I hope you will not give up hope, and I hope good things will find you. I want to thank you. I want to thank the others and all of you for what you've done, and I wish you all the very best in continuing to bring these issues before the public and to try and make a life for yourselves and for all needy people, all poor people.
Yeah, direct action gets the goods. It's people who go out and do it themselves. The presence of Funa bombs in Santa Monica is a direct result of city policy last year. They took autonomous feeding programs that were like out there getting food and feeding people, and they said, oh, look, you come inside. We'll invite you not to be out there by yourself. You come inside, we'll give you building, we'll give you funding, but just you're with the city. Some of those programs said, yes, we'll do that, and some of them didn't take the bait. This year, the city of Santa Monica cut funding for those programs, and the programs have become dependent, addicted to city funding, and consequently, those programs were gone, and there was a big gap in the meals that were going on. And you see the more and more that the municipal government and government at any level is in charge of dealing with people of poverty, the less and less there's actually a successful resolution to that problem. That is why Funa bombs formed out in Santa Monica area as a direct result of city policy, a response.
Well, I'm glad you made that point. That's a kind of sucker move that they made on those organizations, and it's one that we should all watch out for. Just as I'm about to sign off, though, we have a caller, so let me welcome the caller. Is this Sean from Seneca Falls?
Yeah, it is.
Hi, Sean. You had a question for Michael, or?
I just had a comment. The gentleman was talking about getting arrested for shelter and a meal.
Right. That was Lawrence right before Michael, but go ahead.
In the long run, that's not advisable because if you apply for a job, one of the things most companies now ask you on the application is, have you been arrested?
Mm-hmm. So that's very difficult to move from one bracket of the economy to another, to move out of there, because there's so many difficulties in getting employed when you don't have housing, when you don't have things. And again, like what's been brought up, people in that economic class were targeted. If you're poor or next to poor or associate in that area, that you're more likely to get stopped, arrested, get some sort of criminal record. There's a phrase, todos somos ilegales, is a phrase very common here. We are all illegal. And it's more than just a simply immigration issue, people coming from Mexico. It's more and more and more people in our country are finding themselves pushed into illegality by the current structure of the law and the economy. And I think it's important not just to hold responsible our political government and the political figures that we elect, but also our economic government, the kind of people behind the scenes who control the money, who control the economy, who control the jobs, who make the decisions, who push the political governments into different directions. These people are also responsible. And that's why one of the reasons that one of the buildings that was targeted was owned by large property owners. It's still questionable about who owns the property, but it's leased by McGuire Thomas, which is the largest real estate baron in Los Angeles, so consequently high rent is one of the boon of a real estate baron. So, that high rent pushes people out onto the streets, and that was a deliberate target. And also it's right next to the Rand Corporation and part of a Rand Corporation development. If people are familiar with the Rand Corporation, it's a class war right-wing think tank.
Does a lot of work for the Defense Department.
Yeah, that was responsible for the Pentagon Papers, Pentagon Papers were stolen, and also responsible for the initial report saying why we should be in the Vietnam War. It was more recently responsible for a survey on homelessness where the Rand Corporation did a study on drug use and the homeless in order to affect public opinion. And what they did is they went into shelters and gave people $10 to answer their questions. Are you, do you use drugs, do you da-da-da? So it's sort of like a human guinea pig, study. You get paid some money to, divulge these questions about yourself. People needed the money, and they answered the question, yeah, sure, I do drugs, sure. And you got the money based on whether you get the right answers. If you didn't want a drug user, they didn't give the study. So consequently, the study came out, and surprise, surprise, a huge amount of the homeless population is supposedly drug users. And that is what study was used to target the homeless population in public opinion so that less people would think in terms of an injury to one is an injury to all. These people's rights and human rights are part of my human rights, and I need to work in solidarity with them.
Well, good for you. Sean, do you have a comment there?
As more people become pushed out of legality, it will become harder and harder for us, for everyone in society, to evaluate the prospective honesty of each other. In other words, it'll be harder for me to trust you as things go along if I can't use as a criterion, say, whether or not you've been arrested.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
The fact that you have no criminal record used to be a mark of that you had at least kept your nose clean enough to stay out of jail. But now that
Now it might be a badge of
huh?
Now it might be a badge of courage. Now it might mean you're a decent person who stood up for something right.
Yeah, and so that's one more thing that gets taken away from someone who is trying to trust somebody else.
Trust is a very important issue, and you have to work with that, and particularly in these circumstances where it is difficult to trust people. You don't know people. People might steal from you. The community had to make a lot of decisions about how it made decisions, and it had to figure out how it trusted people and how and when it said it was time not to.
If we can't trust each other, it's easier to be divided.
Yeah, exactly. And there are some pretty good principles for how to work out trusting people. I mean, does the person you work with use coercive behavior? If you're being coerced into doing something, that's maybe a chance not to trust them. Coercion is almost the central principle of government, certainly in the enforcement of any government. And other than that...
I don't know. Certainly is an essential feature of bad government. Is there such a thing as a good government, which just has its, derives its powers from the just consent of the governed? We don't have one, but I wish we did, you know. I think there is such a thing.
Yeah, well, it's also a matter of informational power. And as you have to use direct, violent force against your population, that shows that you're actually losing power. And this is an example of people losing power, government losing power, because it has to arrest people, cause them pain, take them away. This is, you know, true all through the 80s in Latin American countries. In the United States, there is largely still, surprisingly enough, a sense of the government's authority. And the government maintains that by limiting the amount of news that is comes out to people. So I want to thank your show and other shows like that that bring, quality media out to people. If, you know, Dan Rather isn't really saying that he has a $200,000 a year salary.
Are you kidding? He has like an $8 million a year salary, $5 million.
I'm kidding. I guess I didn't know it was that bad yet.
Yeah.
And he, they're not saying that, you know, one of the major three TV networks is owned directly by military defense contractors. They don't talk about the, you know,
right.
That level of economic...
Well, we talk about it here, and it's an important point. But, Michael, I'm afraid I'm just simply out of time. Sean,
okay.
I want to thank you very much for your call, as always. And, Michael, I want to give my thanks to you, to Lawrence, to Dave, to Lynn, and I just really want to wish you the very, very best in the future and hope that you will personally find an easier living situation, an employment situation, and everybody will.
All right, well then, from Autonomous Flamingo, from Food No Bombs, we salute you. An injury to one is an injury to all.
Thank you very much, Michael, and thank you, Sean.
Bye. You're right.
All right, well, I think we're about out of time for this hour, but I wanted to get in one little press note before we did, because what Michael said was certainly right on about things just don't get reported. Yesterday, I went to the City Council of Geneva. Those of you who are Genevans may be particularly interested in this. I was invited, shall we say, to attend because I was told that City Attorney Clark Cannon had expressed skepticism when informed of some of the things that I have said here on this show over weeks of investigation of the Guardian matter, looking at internal documents under Freedom of Information requests and so forth, and that he would only believe it when he saw it. So I went there, and for 20 minutes I spoke as a public petitioner. I presented a smattering of the evidence that I have given out on this show. Linda Oakes was the one who had mentioned that she'd had this conversation of with Clark Cannon. I laid out about the hourly wage we were supposed to get out of Guardian was not even what was in their internal papers, about how they had never researched Guardian, about how Guardian has had a history of labor troubles, price-fixing investigation is going on, that they have closed plants, that the number of jobs was all overblown by the public officials. I went through this whole litany of things as best I could condense it. And at the end of it, I called for the appointment of a special counsel to investigate ethics charges against city officials who were, of course, in that room, and I was speaking directly to, especially the ones who had gone on that junket to Iowa that Guardian had paid for. And I read from the ethics clause of the Industrial Development Agency and the city contracts. And this is, I said, if there's no research, this was clearly just a gift and from Guardian, and that's strictly forbidden. And I said there should be an investigation. And then Linda got up in support of that. And Craig Fox was right there from the Finger Lakes Times, who has failed to report any of this, basically. And I thought maybe the fact that somebody is petitioning the city council for an independent council investigation of corruption right there in that city council was something. As I said to Lyndon, that could have been a banner headline in this community. Do you know, I don't see even one word about it, like a total news blackout on the part of the Finger Lakes Times, apparently, that they will not report even these things when they arise in official meetings. This, Phil Beckley has been invited onto this show, the editor of the Finger Lakes Times, to explain his policies. He frankly won't even respond. But I do think you should know that this happened and how poorly you are served by the Finger Lakes Times and that you simply don't get news there of what's happening in your community. All right, we'll be back after 5 minutes of NPR News.
Be rich when everyone's poor relative becomes a rocker relative and Tom's no longer it. What a switch
when we all have earned in fantastic teeth. How will we determine who's who underneath? And put all your name